The common bond of fellowship among those who had ushered in a new era of communications led to the founding of the association in 1911. From its inception, there was the realization that pioneering was not solely a characteristic of early telephone development. The only requirement for membership was soon established as 21 years of service in the industry, expressing the concept of pioneering as a continuous process. The industry was then, as now, a vigorous, growing, and changing business. Every improvement created the stimulus for further improvements to meet the ever-increasing demands for better and faster communication. And this book goes on from there, and is a great, great primer if you want to get into the real, like, nuts and bolts of the history. I'm going to go kind of quickly because it's about 100 years of the history. So this is the patent, the original patent that was the impetus for Bell beginning to have a service. And basically, the pioneers, they'd worked so hard on this system, and they wanted to have a way to continue, and to continue learning, to continue doing what they did. They had established this thing, this system that nobody really knew very much about. It was mysterious. As I said, Bell didn't really understand electricity when he first developed the phone. He understood sound very well, but continued learning and continued progressing. And as the system grew, that was something they wanted to keep alive. And that is what I just read. The part of their mission was to encourage this continuous learning, this continuous process of being engaged in telecommunications and their hobbies and that kind of stuff. So this is an early receipt for your subscription. And this was before this is like some of the earliest subscriber stuff. This is from 1877. And this is the first telephone advertisement. And this was the first advertising telephonic systems as a service. And I think this is offering the actual ability to contact an operator and have end-to-end conversations. This is a little bit later. These were the first workers in the telephone system, and they were young people, hackers, people that could you know, switch some of the calls as people were starting to use telephones for communication with people and have them in their homes or businesses. But it didn't work out. Because they weren't very good as, like, customer service representatives to a lot of the clients, and I'm sure a lot of you have seen this picture. I have another one of a cartoon from a little bit later of how the younger men workers would not be as courteous as operators. But these were some of the kinks. They didn't really know how to operate the company as a service to people, and so you know, there's some really funny statements on here. That they're careless and selfish and that kind of stuff. So they have lack of courtesy, and then it's showing the female operators who have courtesy and that kind of stuff, and that equals success, of course. So it's slowly the Bell system, like, began to take off, and they had an initiative. They had, like, a purpose for creating an actual company around this invention. So it was put into words that they would provide this service locally and then ever expanding broader. Like, and this statement's actually circled. It talks about having service throughout the known world. So again, they're pioneering. They're in new territory. This wasn't Bell's purpose. He just wanted to transmit voice over wires. He didn't necessarily envision a way of, like, having many subscribers or anything like that. He had really good people around him to support the invention and create a business that actually sustained itself. So this is the first switch in Seattle. First telephone exchange switchboard that was actually put into service. This is a little later, 1883. This is Graham Bell opening the Chicago-New York long-distance circuit in 1892. This is really interesting. These are candlestick phones that are left in people's homes that you can quickly ring your operator and have your service reinitiated. So again, it's like they're just figuring out what are the models, like how can we expand this network and what is it useful for? None of this stuff was known. It was all new territory. And these were some of the other jobs that people ended up doing. They expanded significantly and created long line systems connecting many, many cities and growing their network, and the technology was evolving at the same time. So these are some of the plant workers. These are guys that are actually out there building the system. And this is where that fellowship comes from. It's coming from something that's very new, very mysterious. And again, they don't fully understand what they're doing, but it's slowly growing and becoming a bigger and bigger system. And they start having a lot of employees. And out of this invention and this growth, very rapid growth. I mean, they had to keep up with a lot of changes in they're competing with telegraphy, is that right? Telegraphy, and just trying to keep pace with themselves, actually. I mean, the innovation just is exponential at a certain point. It just continues to grow. So they had a real culture, like social groups forming, a lot of people working together to build this system out. This is particularly interesting. As I said, the operators were young guys at first, but that didn't work out because of courteousness. And so they had female operators. And this is a very diverse workforce, but everybody found spots. And again, I just wanted to emphasize, this is a woman, of course, and there is a serious streak of women working, doing serious stuff, supervisory roles, managers, big time within this growing company. They're a part of this pioneer spirit that slowly builds up. And even people, again, with disabilities. This is a blind operator. Real quick. I'm not sure. I would imagine. I mean, again, they innovated all kinds of stuff. Sure. Yeah. They would have flags, and I'm sure they adapted it so that she could feel what number and this kind of stuff. But try to hold your questions a little bit, because I got to pick up momentum here. I'm already running a little late. So again, this workforce expands. They're evolving the system. They have a much bigger switchboard that's coming into use, and many more subscribers. And it just continued on from there. So these are many, many operators, a huge force of women that are controlling calls and getting people talking to who they're trying to get a hold of, and again, it's a business, and it's that spirit of they're there to provide the service and be loyal to their subscribers and all of that. So with this this is another one of a slightly more advanced switchboard. With this they began to get a culture, and I kind of spoke to this a little bit, but that's where they wanted to continue. Basically, the pioneers came out of people that were leaving the system. They had been there and been very loyal. They worked for the company. They've innovated. They've done a lot of things. They wanted to keep that ingenuity, that spirit, just the feeling of you created something that never before existed. This is a very new realm, new territory in technology. And so they slowly started to build the pioneer organization at 1911. It was when it was founded. And that provided an outlet for people that were leaving. They had been there for 30 years, that kind of thing. So that they could continue associating with people that they had built this amazing thing with, stay engaged, and also serve the community that they had spent their careers in. And there's also a streak of hobby, because a lot of these people are tactile. They had worked with their hands. They had built the system. So they emphasize that continuing your own interests in your own pursuits. And again, this organization was basically a place for them to feel still associated, not like they had just left and abandoned it. I want to quickly talk about architecture a little bit, because these buildings are amazing. These are a couple pictures of the Seattle buildings that went in. And this is what they were building. And if you look at a lot of what they wear and the architecture, it's a really successful business. I mean, it's just beautiful to me. And this history is really, really fun to look at. So these are a couple shots of a Seattle office. I like this one, it's $45,000. It's a really nice building for $45,000. Of course, at the time, it was probably a lot of money. And this speaks to how robust it was. I mean, the stuff they were building, the way they designed things, they were built to last. And I'll get into this with phones and other things at a later time in the talk. But basically, this building, you know, continued on. They were able to provide service through a fire and all of that. And actually, the air quality was better inside. It's really interesting. And this is a building in New York City, which is massive. Yeah. It doesn't say on here. Yeah, very well maybe. Yeah. All right, we'll continue on here. So here's an early testing laboratory. And this speaks to that innovation, you know, just what they were doing. They're innovating, the stuff was changing. So these guys just all had a different position within this massive growing organization. And so these guys, I think, are doing vacuum tubes, repeater tubes. And this is a rear view of power. This is in San Francisco, and this is sort of what it takes to power the system. And the way they design power, it's a lot of it, some of the basic principles behind it in the telephone system are so well planned out and make so much sense. The way they install things, it's very similar today. So I'm going to keep going. This is a picture of the introduction of, he's testing contact circuits, so like early relay switching systems. And this is a step-by-step system. So I was speaking a lot about the culture and how it got so big that they needed social groups. They started putting out magazines, and that's where a lot of the pictures I just showed you came from. Pacific Telephone Magazine, and basically a lot of what the pioneers did is keep the old magazines and a lot of the old material, and that's where a lot of what I'm showing you right now about the history has come from. And that's part of the fellowship and their loyalty to the company. They preserve the history, and it's actually still available. You can find these things through the pioneers and what they do. So these are a bunch of trainees, and you know, you got to imagine you're expanding a system like this. You have to hire tons and tons of people to run the system, and so here we are with a bunch of ladies who have just been trained. I think this was again in Seattle because I got this out of Pacific Telephone, which I'll get to in a second. They also had social stuff, and this is the basketball team. And this is a small example. There's a lot of examples of this in the Bell system of people that would have activities, sport, softball teams. There were rifle teams. They would go fishing. And this is where the pioneers started coming in. Is that in addition to retired people that have been with the company for 21 years, it's also people that are active employees. And I want to emphasize that here because it's getting much, much bigger. They're doing things as a part of the company. So the pioneers they were embracing everybody who was involved. So if you were an active employee and you'd served for 21 years and you were still working with the company, you were allowed to join in and become a pioneer yourself while you're working for the company. This is Pacific Telephone Magazine cover from 1922. And in the magazine, they started publishing a lot of the activities and a lot of stuff around technology, like what's changing, what's new, what is, you know, what's going on, what events are going on, all the stuff that was surrounding this, as I said, socio-industrial group, these people that had built this massive system and sort of charting new territory in the unknown, they were able to trade around kind of, and this is where I get into like parallels between hacker and pioneer. They could talk about all kinds of issues, but be that tight-knit community. And so start looking for some of those parallels. And that's why I'm sort of going over the history of the telephone very quickly, because I want to focus on the pioneers and the cohesion amongst them. So they would have these magazines, and they would show events, show different, like, you know, special interest things. And again, they'd have articles about technology and the business itself. And there were other publications. This is just an example local to where I'm at in the Northwest. I put this in here. This is out of one of the Pacific Telephone issues, and it was, I think Bernie S. asked this of me on the radio show the other day, because he was commenting on the telephotograph. And so these were shots of the telephotograph, and they were published, and basically people could read about it and say, oh, you know, this is the new stuff that other people are doing, and it helps that innovation, helps them continue their own innovation or give them ideas. They also talked about lettuce. And you know, that's an example of things that are, you know, kind of unrelated but in the community. They would have articles about like special interest stuff that wasn't really related, but they tie it in. They would, it would be news in their social group. And then of course the vice president, that's sort of industry news. And here's some accident statistics from 1922. Actually, this is 1926, so they're talking about 1925. There's also a lot of like show stuff, humor, like levity to keep people engaged and, you know, having fun. And so this was the Seattle Advertising Club. There's some costume ball. So there's a lot of goofiness, a lot of antics in the social aspects of how the people that pioneered our telephone system, how they interacted. So this is just a funny shot I wanted to talk about. And this is a meal card from one of the very first, I'd say about the first decade of the telephone pioneer meetings. This was a printed menu card. Again, the stylizing, the design, there was a very dignified job to work in the telephone company. You were doing amazing things. Everyone dressed very, very well. I don't know, a lot of the plant guys, they were out working very hard, but they all had, you know, nice felt hats. And I mean, the guys in the offices, or the gals, or women, excuse me, that were running the switchboards, they were all in very nice full-length dresses, that kind of thing. It was a very dignified job. So you see the aesthetic in some of the history of like how seriously they took their role and how you know, loyal they were to it. And I don't know, there was just a certain culture that they created over time as they were building this institution.
That statue of Mercury was at the top of 195 Broadway.
Really?
And it's now out of
that. Okay, I didn't know that. Yeah, I came here to learn too. I'm awesome. Yeah, I love the depiction of him. And whenever I see the spirit of communications, I really like that. I didn't know that. I'm here to learn too. I'm, by all means, I don't know everything about the 200 years or 100 years, 100 years leading up to the phone's invention. So I'm going to get through this, and I really want to talk to people and find out kind of if you have any questions or that kind of thing. But we'll get to that very quickly here. This was the what we talked about this on the radio. This was the cover of the proceedings for the Telephone Pioneers of America meeting, 10th meeting of the General Assembly and 18th meeting total. And this was in 1931, and it took place here at the Hotel Pennsylvania. And I actually, yeah, I brought the copy of it, so. If you're very, very nice, I might let you flip through it, but I'm going to watch you. So that's here. And I really love the pen and ink. I mean, this is beautiful stuff to go through. And again, it's the pioneers that have preserved a lot of this. And I'll get to that very shortly here. because I want to talk about locally, like how I got involved and my the chapter in my community, the kinds of things they're doing, because all of you can get involved with what the Pioneers are doing, whether you're in telecommunications or not. They're very open and welcoming. And I'll stop there and continue with the history. Really trying to get through this. It's kind of slow. This was Miss Daisy Thomas of Oregon, first woman president of a Pioneer chapter. And I really want to emphasize on the ladies because they played a huge part in what the Pioneers have done and what they've built. And I think that makes this company really, really, really unique. So, and I just wanted to end some of the historical stuff, the stuff I got gleaned out of magazines, old magazines, with this, because this is sort of foreshadowing for the future and where it's at now. This is an advertisement on the back of one of the Pacific Telephone magazines. It says, "Voice highways. Town, county, or state boundaries are not boundaries of the telephone service, or not the boundaries of the telephone service. Every Bell telephone is a long-distance station." So, how am I doing on time? Does anyone? Perfect. That's good. Okay. So this was an article written in the Seattle Times about the Museum of Communications. The museum is a 501c3 nonprofit. I think I said that right. And it is a project of the Telephone Pioneers of America, and specifically the local chapter. I think it's, at the time, it was called Charles B. Hopkins Chapter 30 of the Pioneers, and this is in Pacific Northwest territory. It was formerly Pacific Northwest Bell. So there's the article. And this is actually a picture of my local central office. This is in Georgetown, Washington, and this is the Duwamish Central Office. And what happened is a bunch of guys were sort of getting ready to retire, and one of them was a manager, and they basically were able to convince the telephone company at the time that they, as the Telephone Pioneers, start a museum with extra space that was being created in the central office, because a lot of the telephone system was getting smaller, so they had more space. And they were able to get the second, half of the second, and all of the third floor of this building. And the first floor itself is a working central office, and it's run by Quest right now, which is probably going to change. I don't know if they got bought yet, but so there you go, museum. And this is early stuff. This is the first 10 years of the Pioneers. This is the kind of stuff they did, that fellowship, loyalty, service. They're making Christmas toys, yes, Christmas toys for needy children. And they've done all kinds of things. There's a lot of projects. I think on the radio show they mentioned the audio baseballs for visually impaired. And they also do books on tape for visually impaired people as well. And a myriad of other projects. So this is an early one. And basically the last section, last half, I'm gonna go through as quickly as I can with shots that I did in the museum to kind of take you through what the Pioneers have done locally to engage not only people in the telecommunications industry, but just in the community in general. All kinds of people go through this museum. So I'm gonna try to pick up the pace here. This is an example of the Northwest workers digging open wire out of the snow. So again, that regional need became a necessity because so many people were involved with the phone system that they had to, basically their meetings, similar to like a Hope Conference or something the regular yearly meeting, they had to split into general assemblies, and then from there they split into chapters. So again, your telephone pioneers are localized all around the country. Not all of them have museums, though, so that's a distinction. they have everything in this museum that they've basically preserved a lot of history. And a lot of workers that maybe aren't pioneers or they didn't really stay active with the pioneers, they would basically donate stuff. And that is how this museum has grown and existed. So there's some Bell stationery. There's a lot of tools and a workbench. So this is the power system for the entire museum. This is the teletype area. It's an Associated Press teletype. And this is a rare Siemens, I think it's a, like a, what would you say, like a generic brand, kind of a imitation of some of the other brands. Obviously, Siemens is not Western Electric, yeah. Yep, yeah. So this is what it looks like when you walk in. And the museum has every generation of switching equipment and telephone you can possibly imagine represented. So this is a panel for the Parkway office. This is an old panel switch. This is the number one crossbar that's there. This is where Bob works. I tend to help him a little bit, and this is for the number one crossbar, I believe. And there's a number five there as well, but this is the test board, test cart. Switches on the cart. Andy, he's 92. He's our oldest member at the museum. He's working on this North Electric CX-100. And this came out of a battleship, I believe. And he's trying to get it to work. And he does all kinds of stuff. But again, it provides an opportunity for him to relate with people that are in the industry, that want to talk to some of the older guys, and basically keep that bond, keep the fellowship alive. And so he's there every Tuesday. This is a tone generator. It makes a certain tone. So yeah, I helped refurbish this a little bit for the multi-frequency display. And what you find is that when they get old equipment, they basically want to set up a display so that they can show kids, so that they can show the community, all kinds of people. People in tech industry, all the way down to like your Cub Scouts or all kinds of groups. They'll come in, maybe guys that just, work on the truck. They work with Quest. They want to come in and see stuff. So this is part of the display. This is another tone generator. I don't know which tone this makes. I can't remember. But it's pretty big. This is an example of a slightly more advanced teletype system. And this is the 3 ESS that's on the second floor. Slightly more sophisticated, and again, all of these generations are represented there. That's the back of it. This is done by Steven. He works with the teletypes. He was involved with SDF Lone Star, and their original 3B2 is actually here on display. And he did this installation. So there's an example of Unix systems there. Manuals for that. And this gets into books. There's a lot of books and a lot of things to read. I obviously was able to get magazines to help support the brief history I've outlined here. That's sort of a crash course in it. But there's a ton of information at the museum. And it's not the only information there. I want to emphasize the pioneers themselves as repositories for a lot of wisdom. And that's part of why I got involved. I wanted to understand telephones. I wanted to help out a little bit. And the welcoming, the way they were being with me, the kind of, I don't know, the instruction, the attitude they had towards a young person trying to understand things, wanting to help a little bit, it really was pleasant, and it made me want to come back and help out more. So they're very eager to teach people. And again, this museum that they've created is a wonderful environment for that. It's excellent. And so there's other museums around the country, but this is a very unique one and a gem, really. There's old books and really big books. And this one's really big. It's a storage, 6055. I don't know what's in it, but it's huge. There's really tiny books. This is a microfiche catalog. And if you look closely, it's made by Diebold. There's some more Diebold. Phone books. They have a couple of those. Interesting stations. And they have technical journals, which are very similar to like 2600, zines, that kind of thing. Except a little, yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's what I was thinking is like, wow, 2600 is very similar. And again, there's a lot of parallels. So, and they've got a lot of these. Really, yeah. I was wondering, and I wanted to leave time so that people could ask and see, and likewise, if I could find out, like, if some of the stuff has been scanned, because there's a lot of information which gets into, like, BSPs. These are ones that Bob and I were using on the crossbar. And this is Frank in the foreground, and they're sitting in front, his partner and him are sitting in front of the wall of BSPs that are there. And he's working on one of those tape decks I mentioned about, for the visually impaired, which is, again, another project. And again, they've created this museum to use as a space for teaching about what they do and enrolling people in their organization, but also being a resource for the community and providing service, you know, as... And not service as in telephones, but like service, like being a service organization in their community where they spent their entire career. This was kind of a funny picture about divestiture and stuff like that. So, and this is just spare stuff they have. It's just all this wonderful equipment. And I want to mention that all the switches work, and that's kind of what they're working on is kind of getting them functioning, getting lines tied in, and connecting them up. So they've got a lot of spare parts for things. This is an exhibit on the types of wire over the generations. Newer wire, older, and really new. And then quickly, I'm going to look at some cool phones and then stop and kind of wrap it up and let you guys maybe ask some questions. And I'll get into, this is a candlestick, some ringers. This is an intercom basically for like an apartment system. It's a vestibule telephone. This phone is to use, let's look at this, to prevent ignition of hazardous atmospheres. That's the warning. But this is basically for like in a mine or someplace that has fumes that could ignite. I think that's what this one is. Either that or it's bomb-proof, but it looks bomb-proof. And this is just a funny alarm, and I put this in here to preface the next photo, which is really funny. Yes. See, you got to ring the fire bell, because, yeah, this one is beyond shop repair. So that is a very melted Model 500 telephone. And I probably mentioned this on the shows, on the radio. I went to Dayton and I bought this old phone right here. See, it's real, you can hear the bell. And I refurbished it at the museum. So the guys were really nice. I had like all these pioneers basically offering their help, and we got it all wired up. And they provided a new coil handset cord and gave me, 10 feet of shielded pair, and basically cleaned it up, and then I fixed the transmitter and receivers. I swapped in some parts, and this is an example of just how cool they are. They love to see somebody coming in with a project. You know, like I said, normally I walk around with Bob, and I try to like learn a little bit more and more every time I go, But if I have something that I'm doing at home, anything telephone related, this is the resource. This is what they're there for. They know how this stuff works and how, you know, how to explain it in like a really approachable way and get you involved in some of their projects. It's very reciprocal sort of relationship. So it's part of the fun that I have there. This is a punch card phone. Another example of that. This might. Yeah. Exactly. Sorry, going quickly, trying to save time here. This I don't know exactly what this is for. Is it okay? Okay. All right. Yeah. See, a lot of the stuff I don't even know. But I took shots I thought would be interesting. You know. This is a recent display. They put in a partner system. But, you know, when they get equipment, if it works and stuff, they'll try to find a display for it so that they can walk around with people and show, you know, this is an example of this. And you pick up one end, call, and again, you can hear the call quality and try to understand. And you can actually watch, like, how the switching system's working. And it's a great way to learn what actually a phone call is. This is, like, a business phone. This is pretty common in the 80s and 90s. Is that what it is? ISDN? Yeah. This is an early radio telephone, and these last couple shots are mobile phones. So this is a supercar phone. It has an off switch with a key. Which I think we should put in modern handsets. So, some cool old Motorolas, and notice the guide with the telephone and the steering wheel. It's kind of interesting. I wonder what those instructions are like. And this is International Mobile Telephone Systems, and it's a briefcase phone, sort of funny looking. And this is another one, Pulsar. Yeah. So those are all the pictures I brought. And how are we doing on time? Great. Okay, so that's everything I wanted to show. I just basically wanted to get a chance to speak and tell people about the telephone pioneers and who they've been for me and my community and how I got involved. I stumbled on their website, and I started going when the museum was open. And they're all over the country. There are museums on the East Coast, several on the East Coast. And I have a directory. And if you'll excuse my windows here. Oh, I know. It's tragic. Yeah. These are as many links as I have to get a hold of me. So I'll take questions real quick.
My name's Steve. I'm a pioneer, ex-AT&T Long Lines, ex-Bell Labs, ex-AT&T.
Wonderful.
I belong to an organization called InfoAge, which is a startup science history center in Bell Township, New Jersey. We are currently starting a telephony museum.
Wonderful.
So
yes.
And we do not have a telephone museum. We do not have a telephone club.
Got it.
So if anybody's interested in this, I am steve@infoage.org.
steve@infoage.org.
Yeah,
and it's
around. I'm sorry to hack your meeting, but we would like to do the same thing.
Absolutely. Cool.
Other than that, we are looking for stuff, people, and ideas.
Thank you for coming. Thanks for the announcement, too. Can you say that once more? Where can you find operators' consoles? TSBS and what? Wow. All over the place. eBay, somebody said eBay. eBay, I mean, you know, maybe, but I'd suggest like flea markets. It depends on how old too, because a lot of this stuff was sort of ousted. It went the way of, you know, with new technology, the speed that it was coming in. Okay. Yeah, I mean, look around. The stuff is all over, and again, you know, technology is changing so quickly. People are getting rid of it. People have it in their garage. Flea markets, I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about. Got it. No, I don't have any pictures of them, and I don't know exactly what model you're talking about. Anybody else have a question? In right there?
Yeah, I guess my father worked at a farm line for about 5 years. I'm wondering, do they have any of the stuff from the Bell system, not really equipment, but Bell system pretty much put their name and logo on everything that they do.
Right. Yes, there's a lot of memorabilia. That's why I right, exactly. They've got massive soldering irons. Yeah, I mean, they were doing a lot of soldering because that's how wire was bundled, outdoor lines at a certain point. And there is a ton of memorabilia. That's why I put in 2 reams of Bell paper, because there's so many little trinkets and souvenirs. Again, you know, they would honor people for their service, and you would get, like, you know, a pen or buttons, you know, pins, but pins, you know, to recognize and share in that accomplishment of loyalty to the company and building the system that they were all sharing in. So maybe one more question. That's a good question. What kind of impact did the breakup have on the pioneers? The way I see it now, it's strengthened them in that they've grown. They welcome anyone who's been a part of the telecom industry, and as it stands now, there's a lot of small companies, a lot of individuals that have started up. And we see these guys come in, you know, maybe they started some sort of telecom related company, and they will go through BSPs to find, you know, information on how they can make their systems better, and even how they can compete better, which is kind of interesting. So I think for the pioneers, it's really good because it's outreach. Again, it's a socio-industrial organization, so they're able to interact. They're able to have cohesion as people that are involved in that kind of technology. And I don't know if that's a good answer for you. Thank you for coming and listening.